Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are excited to rewind this episode of 48. It was a good one. We had the Mergatory here, or the Merge. I don't know.
I don't know what Survivor knows anymore, McKenna. Survivor doesn't know anymore. They say it's not the Merge. They call it the Merge Meal. They give us a lower third, a cryon of Merge Beach. Like, they can't decide whether it's the Merge or not.
Who knows? But whatever it is, we're here to talk about it and relate it to Merge episodes of Survivor. So let's dive right in. We are going to talk our Outwit, Outplay, and Outlast moments of the week, starting with Outwit. We are talking Tribe Strong at the Merge. We had the questionable, hey, maybe let's go Siva Strong. And that did not pan out for them this, at least this episode. Who knows in future, but.
McKenna, with this Merge in particular, because, again, we're just going to call it the Merge because it's 13 people on a beach voting at the same time with only one person immune. Did you ever have any instinct that this Siva Strong idea that was proposed would ever work?
No, absolutely not, because I feel like this swap was such a true swap that I feel like people actually made relationships here, that I feel like it wasn't just going to be like Siva, Loggy, Vula in the middle. Mm-hmm. And where do we put our three votes? It felt very like wide open.
Was part of that alleviated by the fact that we saw Loggy lose two people in the swap, so that Siva was the very distinct majority tribe coming into this?
I don't think necessarily, because Eva's name was still on the table.
Was it though?
At least from what we were being shown, people were considering Eva.
Yeah, and I mean, you know what, that does go into some of the other discussions I think we have when it comes to our Outlast.
Or Say.
So say
as well.
I mean, Say did get a lot of votes too, and was very clearly the split here, which was so nice. Wasn't it so nice going into a Merge vote and not seeing just a pile of one on people and actually seeing an actual factual split vote?
Yeah. Yeah, so we are talking Tribe Strong, and one that kind of dominates here. We're going back to Borneo, and we're talking Tagi, because their version of Tribe Strong, they have their group of four, and Dr. Sean, they know where he's voting, so they can plan accordingly. But they stick to their group, eliminate the other tribe one by one, and make it all the way to the final.
Yeah. So it's really interesting when we take this into context of Borneo, because first off, obviously Tagi stuck together. That's why we have the term pagoding.
Yeah.
Because they stuck together and they eliminated the entire other tribe. But the interesting thing about this is a world pre-swap. There are no swaps here. And again, like, we had that instances of that at the beginning of the new era, but because it was pre-swap, the question was, is there any chance to kind of build relationships with the other tribe at the Merge? When you're at the Merger. It was the Merger back
yes.
then.
Yes. Not Mergatory, not Merge, Merger.
But, and we did see that, right? We did see people build relationships throughout that Merge. So it wasn't just that we're sticking true with our tribe. Mm-hmm. It was, hey, we are actually working together. But we saw Wigglesworth really struggle with that and make those connections with Jenna and Colleen deeper into the merge as it kept going on. But ultimately, this comes down to that elevation of game theory that Rich and the rest of the Toggies really applied to this entire situation, which we need an alliance. The alliance, which is, again, 25 years removed at this point, seems like such an obvious thing to be talking about in Survivor because we've seen it ever since the first season. But it was originated there, and it was originated as a tribe strong mentality of these four Toggies plus Dr. Sean just decimating Pagong.
Yeah, exactly. We see even like with Jenna and Jervis painting sitting ducks and stuff on their shirts because they know what's going on. We see the Toggy four use Sean's voting strategy when voting Jenna Lewis out, because Sean didn't want Jenna to go at that point, but they knew where he was voting and secured basically Jenna going home. So this Toggy alliance took them all the way to five, where they voted Sean out because he was kind of that outlier of the four. But it's also just crazy how, you know, he's voting all these people out, and they're also, this is Pagong, 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 Pagong as well.
Yeah, and this is kind of the reason why we get a swap in the first place. Right? Like, this is why the swap is innovated for Africa, is because we see this. And yeah, we don't have a Pagonging in the Outback. It does go back and forth a bit more because people grew tired of Jerry. But it was, like, almost a Pagonging still in Africa. Like, or in Australia. It was so close. So producers decided, hey, let's amend the formula for Survivor. We'll introduce this swap. We'll get people talking to each other more, making more connections before the merge to make things more interesting at the merge. That it added that question of, do the people you originally bonded with matter more? Are those better connections than this secondary group of people you have after you've kind of, you know, been through it a bit? You're hungry. Gone through the mental exercise and the physical exercise of the game, what bonds people more? Is it going to be more personality-based? Is it going to be more, hey, we ended up in this random arrangement together, so let's do it that way? And that's why it's so fascinating looking back on Borneo, because would this four come together in a
swap
newer season, in a swap
Kelly's
situation?
Out. Kelly's joining Pagong 100%, or joining up with like Jenna, Colleen.
Yeah, the younger woman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's so fascinating to see, like, yes, this is our prime example of a tribe staying strong at the merge, but it's almost like they didn't have a better option. And it didn't help that Pagong was like all over the place. Obviously, that first vote at the merger in Borneo is like a famous, like, what is it? It's a 4-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1- Togi Alliance. And that's part of the reason why Togi stays strong, is because the other, like the Pagongs, were just not organized whatsoever, because they felt it was amoral, like immoral, to form an alliance.
Strategize, yeah. And then we have the complete opposite here. We hear so much about comma strong, but when push comes to shove, merge vote, goodbye Joe. Joe is out of here. He didn't win immunity, and so he was immediately booted. Now, Joe, I think, was one of the most diehard comma strong people on that beach. And it just feels silly to me to boot that when, okay, he'll win an immunity 2-3, but he's in, he's on your side and you can manipulate him.
Wasn't part of the strategy of getting rid of Joe there, though, the fact that he was the vocal comma strong person? Because when you had the commas and the lessus, because they were Manus, but then they were Lesus because they survived. But when you had that divide and everything, right? If you wanted to work with that other group, because you know you had to eventually, in order, like, we saw people like Gavin and Victoria all, and even Ron, knowing that the non-comma people were going to be pivotal in the late game, right? Mm-hmm. We saw them talking about it all the time. But when you have Joe constantly saying, comma strong, comma strong, comma strong, everyone's going to doubt, like, all of those Lesus are going to doubt whether or not they can do it, right? Like, can they realistically trust that these commas will not be comma strong and will actually integrate them into their end game plans when you have Joe just advocating comma strong? Let's do this. Let's just stick together, eradicate them, and then we have our infighting.
But if you have a majority within the commas, let Joe do whatever he wants.
But I think there was a question of who had the majority. I think there was a lot of posturing within that comma group, and we kind of saw...
I mean, they were never tested. I mean, some of them were tested, but, like, they were never tested as a group to show who, like, really trusted whom within the comma people. So I get why they, you know, automatically turn, but I think it's less to do, in my opinion, less to do of the comma strong of it all rather than, oh, Joe doesn't have immunity.
I think that is part of it. Joe was also on the outside immediately on comma. Yeah. And didn't know that, right? Based on the edit we see in Edge of Extinction, we did have Ron and Victoria being like, yeah, like, we don't really want these returning players around, but let's get rid of them, which is why Victoria pulls off the blindside on Aubrey, why we see Joe go here. I think it was this is the tone-setting vote, and the fact that Joe's also pushing comma strong doesn't help. I think Joe's pushing comma strong here because he doesn't have immunity.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, he is and wants to, like, stay in the game. I think that's another reason why Charity is also pushing Siva strong. She doesn't have immunity here in this part of the game. And she also, besides Mitch, like, where is her alliance? I think she really feels, like, comfortable with her OG tribe and wanted to stick strong with the OG tribe because nobody on the OG tribe let her know that, you know, hey, we're not that big of a fan of you. Mm-hmm. So we don't actually want to keep you in the game.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes down to the fact, I think we kind of see it in the edit we do get in 48, where clearly, like, Eva and Charity weren't connecting very well because Eva just, like, felt Charity was very fake. We saw in last week's episode the conversation, like, the back-to-back confessionals of Charity being like, oh, yeah, David, like, he's so loyal. I can trust him. He's like a puppy dog, just does whatever I say. And David being like, yeah, I'm totally willing to cut Charity as soon as possible, right? Charity just didn't have that grasp on the idea that she wasn't as close with her original tribe as she thought. Yeah. She felt she was in a good spot because no one really alienated her. And we have to give credit to the Sivas. No one alienated Charity to make her realize she was completely on the outs of that tribe.
I mean, honestly, same with Joe a little bit because he thought he had that in with Ron. Mm-hmm. He thought he was, like, had that connection with Ron. He had his locked in alliance with Aurora. Like, I don't think he thought he was at the top, but he thought him and Ron had a little bit stronger of a bond to be like, maybe you advocate for me or let me know that I'm the one going home and can do something about it or something like that.
I don't think it's a coincidence that in both of these situations, the people pushing the tribe strong are people who have never gone to tribal council to that point in the game. Mm. I think that is
it's a safety net.
It is a safety net, and it's why we see it in Ghost Island as well, right? Like, we see Navidi strong in Ghost Island. It's the same concept, right? It's the people who are pushing that are people who didn't have to go to Tribal Council, who, I guess, everyone in Ghost Island, except for Chris Noble, does. But, and he isn't really pushing Navidi strong, but I think that is the concept of it, right? Like, I think going to Tribal Council less, when you don't know who to trust, it's safer for you to push tribe strong because you've at least spent time with those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, we're moving on to outplay, and we're going to talk variations on challenges. I feel like we have talked this version of the, you know, idol or now ball and adding the pole lengths, which is the same as the adding the pole lengths and stepping back when the idol is on the ledge. It's so many different versions. And we wanted to talk like why Survivor might do these variations and challenges and like switch them up and why they're actually like the same challenge, because some versions of these, it feels like they are a different challenge, but on like the wikis and things like that, they're lumped under the same overall, like these are basically the same thing. So we are going to go with Bo Diddley, which you'd think Bo Diddley, you have the bow, the ball, and how,
and balance beam. Those are the important three components of this challenge.
How could you possibly reinvent the wheel, right? Scrap the bow, have a pedestal, same challenge, but it's not like really the same challenge. I'd say the pedestal is closer to the ball from the plate.
Yeah, that's true. I think what it comes down to with this, and I think
hard to handle is the Bo Diddley's counterpart.
I think when it comes to this, and it's interesting because this is now the second season in a row where we've seen an endurance challenge for individual immunity at the not merge, but actually the merge, because again, it's a merge.
We get
but
it.
But it's just so they don't have to say it's a tribe swap next week. But it's actually probably a money thing, in all honesty. Let's be real. Probably a money thing. But when we have this endurance challenge, I think it's really important to compare it to the Bo Diddley and Hard to Handle, because I think those challenges are very similar, but they kind of shift differently. Because this is more in the, this one that we saw this week is more in the audio slave category of challenges, where it's like long pole.
Yeah. It has, that specific challenge has like 20 different variations.
Yeah, because it's like the long pole. Obviously, the one that we see in 48 is very similar to the one that we saw in
Samoa,
Cambodia.
Yeah.
And it's very clear why they've moved to a ball instead of a statue, because Joe gets pegged in the head. It is Joe. No, it's not.
Well, Someone Joe faints.
Oh, right. Yes, Joe faints.
But it's not, it's not because of the idol. No. Nobody gets hit in the head because the pole is very...
Well, there's a potential of it hitting someone in the head. And it's very clear. It's
also just harder with the ball.
Maybe. I mean, like it's moving around. Like how
they shrink the footholds. I think they just switch to a ball because it's harder.
It's possible. But I also think it's a safety. Like, I think getting pegged in the head with a ball isn't as bad as getting pegged in the head by a pointy statue.
Facts.
So, when we look at Bo Diddley, obviously, there isn't a safety concern with that challenge. Like, it isn't beyond, like, you know, people might think because they're overexerting themselves because they stand on this balance beam for literally ever. But we have seen this evolution, because when the challenge is introduced in South Pacific, those bows are massive.
Yeah. The bow, we were looking at the photos, and the bow that Dawn is holding, I think if she held it like this, vertically, So the audio people can know what I'm talking about. I think it would be her whole like head to torso. It was insane how extremely massive this bow was. And it feels like you couldn't even see where the ball was. You kind of had to feel if it was rolling or not.
Yeah, and obviously as we've progressed through seasons, that bow has gotten a lot smaller. And this is
huge.
It's still huge, but it's like more proportionate to people, I would say, than it was back then.
Yes.
Which probably means it's a little lighter and a little easier to navigate a little bit. But maybe it's harder to do the challenge when it's lighter, because like minor adjustments aren't as easily noticeable without that weight. I think when you get Hard to Handle, which replaces the bow with the shaft and plate, right? It's... Why? I think it's a little different. I think you're just experimenting. I think sometimes Survivor producers, when it comes to challenges and why we see so many variations on these challenges, it's because they want to make it a little different every once in a while, mm-hmm. just to make it fresh, right? Like, obviously, we're at a point in the new era where we can, and I mean, like, let's take it back to the voting that we had at the beginning of the season for the final four challenge. And it's like, here's Simocean, Pinball Wizard, and Obstacle Course. It's like, cool, these are the exact same final immunity challenges we've seen throughout the entire new era. Like, could we change it up a little bit, right? Yeah. Like, obviously, outcries for that change. And it's why when we get something like when Last Gasp came back mm-hmm. in 43, right? Like, why it was such a big deal, because it is this iconic moment and it had taken such a break off. Like, we hadn't seen it for a while. And I think when we get these challenges with these variations, it just provides enough that it doesn't feel like every season is cookie cutter. And that's why
it's still providing that same, we want the mechanic of balancing on a beam with a ball.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like progressively getting into a narrower balance beam. Mm-hmm. That's also lower to the ground, which I don't know if the height has anything to do with how difficult this challenge is. I feel like
it definitely does.
But the angle, at least.
Because then you're like, you're more like leaning forward and it's harder to, I don't know, your feet are sliding forward, basically.
Yeah, so it's interesting to think conceptually, but I think this is just a, hey, this is the same challenge, but we can change it a little bit. I think what's more interesting is when they change back. Because we had Bo Diddley and South Pacific. We didn't get it again until Millennials versus Gen X. Mm-hmm. And then we had it in Edge of Extinction. And then we had a break. But in between South Pacific and Millennials versus Gen X, we had Hard to Handle in Kageyan in Cambodia. And then mm-hmm. when they brought the challenge back in the new era, they used Hard to Handle for 41 and then switched back to Bo Diddley for 42 and 43. Or 42 and 47, sorry. So it's interesting, and it doesn't seem like there's a pattern in how they do it, but they are just like changing it up enough so that when you see it, you're like, yeah, this is a great challenge, and not mm-hmm. a, oh my God,
or like this is again. A classic. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it's not one of the adjustments to a challenge that is just, hey, we're doing this to make it so that it doesn't it's take tougher. As much time.
Yeah.
Like we've seen in
Get a Grip.
Yeah, Get a Grip. Yeah. Like the one where they're holding onto a pole, right? Like the first time there's the rope around it that you can step on and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get rid of that. You narrower start getting down foothold. And narrower perches, yeah. smaller pole, like almost no toe holes whatsoever. So it's interesting to see how production changes. And then when we look at something like Bo Diddley, how conceptually doesn't change. I don't think the difficulty of it necessarily changes in either of these variations, and it just seems like a palate cleanser to mm. change it up every once in a while. With 48 having a I mean obviously Bo Diddley was the immunity challenge in 47
mm-hmm.
at this point in the game, right? At the mergatory merge challenge. So it's very interesting to see that we did get a change in that, and that Survivor wasn't just like, hey, let's do the exact same thing in right. the same cycle, which we are so used to happening.
Which, you know, brings me into Simocean, right? Simocean is so overused as the final immunity challenge. And like you were saying, in the 48th or in the fan vote 450, all right, do you want to see Simocean as the final immunity challenge? I feel like it's so tired and done as the final immunity challenge, except they did it in Ghost Island as a, like, it's not tribal, but it's a reward challenge with two people on a team, and it was huge. So yeah. This is a way of keeping basically the same challenge. So we have Bo Diddley, which is like slightly different challenges, but this is just the same challenge and altering it for different amounts of people or a different phase in the game. And I think taking classic challenges like Simocean and bringing it into a reward where you have to work with a partner to do something like this is a great refresh to one of these challenges that can honestly be quite boring.
Yeah, one of the problems with Simocean is that it's really hard to follow from a viewer perspective sometimes. because we're cutting through. You're not exactly sure. Yes, they have different colored balls, so you can kind of tell, but you have to remember who has what ball and everything like that. And part of Sim Motion, the hard part about Sim Motion is when you add more balls and it changes which side the ball's coming out of because of the gate, right? And more balls you have, the faster that gate changes. You have to keep a greater track of where the balls are all going. But with this Ghost Island variant, the interesting thing is, first off, this was a paired reward challenge at an uneven number. So someone sat out of this reward
challenge. Crazy. Yeah.
But then it's on a grander scale. It doesn't have the changing gates. And it takes that concentration aspect of the challenge and turns it into an endurance part. Because now it's run up these stairs because one of you has to be at the bottom to catch this spool and the other one has to put it down.
Yep, exactly. It's such just a different tweak to this same basic challenge of I have this thing that's going down a track and it's going to come out at a certain time. Don't drop it. And it's something that I feel like when Phil and I watch Australian Survivor, they do things like that. They tweak things that we see in American Survivor and tweak it for a little bit of a grander scale or for more people or something to that effect. And I feel like certain things are easy for Survivor to do, but they want to take that, let's just throw a bow in there. Let's throw some pedestals in there. You know, I just feel like there could be just a slight more amount of effort.
I'm really glad you brought up Australian Survivor because we haven't covered Australian Survivor on the main channel in a long time. So we've avoided mentioning Australian Survivor in the rewind because of that. And McKenna and I are still a little adverse to doing so because we don't want to like alienate people who aren't watching Australian Survivor or anything like that. But I think Australian Survivor has a really good thing where a good example for this, where, and it was a challenge we actually saw in this current season, which is the peg wall challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it was originally introduced, it was an individual immunity challenge. And they made just a slight enough change to it and a variation on the challenge to make it apply to the tribal phase of the game.
Yep.
And that's what I think Australian Survivor is excelling at that American Survivor isn't, is they are keeping these concepts of these things that we recognize, these things that we are excited about, and they aren't afraid to use it at any portion of the game. And that's what this Ghost Island aspect of this change to Sim Motion is so exciting because it's, yes, it's on a grander scale, but it is the same challenge. It is the exact same thing. But this is something you could do at any point in the game. And it was so nice seeing this outside of a final immunity situation. Because it's almost
like the where they're in the water and trying to lap each other, that endurance, like the endurance. Yes. So it's similar to that where you could do it as a tribe, just like longer or something where, you know, each tribe member, and if you need to dip, you can dip out, something like that. It could be slightly changed.
Yeah, it's just, it's fascinating to think like we are 25 years in and production still hasn't gone to the point where they have perfected challenge design. And I actually think that's one of the most compelling things about Survivor is that, yes, are we in the new era getting to a point where challenges are a little stale?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. However, there's always the possibility for innovation and that's what makes it exciting. You're still tuning in and yes, people who are listening to a podcast talking about the history of Survivor, probably tuning in more for like the strategy side of things, the character side of Survivor and not the challenge side.
Listen,
some people might be. I know, McKenna, and that's the thing, right? Is some people still, and especially like look at the kids, right? I remember watching Survivor and just always being excited about challenges as a kid. And that is one of the things that is compelling. And just like that, what is the next challenge is great. I love it when we get it this time on Survivor and we don't know what the challenge is. Like, I'm kind of bummed that I know the next one is the same one they did at this point in the game last season, right? With the spool and the sandbag and holding it up as long as possible.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bummed that I know that because there is at least some excitement of, ooh, what's this one? When you don't know what's coming.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we are going to move into our outplay right now, or sorry, our outlast right now, and that is being voted out at the merge, but it is also your first tribal council. So we see Charity leave here, and it is the first tribal council she attends, and it just so happens to be the quote-unquote merge tribal council, and it's so interesting watching people play tribal council for the first time and it be like around people who have all basically gone to tribal council already. I know some people have not. It's more than just Charity, but it's really interesting watching those people maneuver tribal council when everyone else is like, yeah, I know, we've been there, done that, you know, you're not kind of fooling us.
It's so fascinating. And obviously, like, we see different perspectives on it. We see Eva's perspective with, like, this is super nervous. Like, I have not tested my alliances with anyone. Like, I trust people, but I can't tell if they're lying to me. So I don't, maybe I have to play my idol. But another interesting thing, McKenna, there are some weird statistics with this tribal council here. Because this is the first tribal council in the new era. Sorry, the first tribal council where everyone is on the same beach in the new era, where no one doesn't cast a vote. Wow. Everyone casts a vote in this tribal council. And it is the first time someone has not lost their vote for this exact moment.
Look at that. We get all 13 votes.
Which then, therefore, also makes this the first time since Island of the Idols that 13 people have been on the same beach and all cast their vote at the same time. So, yeah. I mean, it happened a few times with 13 because it happened in the first time we saw it was in Cambodia when it was the first, like, the largest merge they've ever had in 13, and Fishback makes a big deal out of that. Mm-hmm. The only time we've seen it at 13 where, because most of the, I hadn't noticed this until I started doing research here. This is one of the larger merges when it comes to the new era. Uh-huh. Most of the merges have actually been later. I know.
I never count, and I just always assume that it's 13 and just don't, like, actually, like, figure it out.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to tell. But actually, now that I think about it, maybe I'm just thinking of that because I looked at numbers and I did counting, and it's because of, like, lost votes and stuff. No, because I was right, because 41 was 12, and a lot of time it's 12 that we're merging at, and not 13. Although last season was also 13, obviously, but it wasn't the merge, so it doesn't count. but the only time we've seen 13 where a lost vote happened, I believe, is one of the moments we're about to talk about in Outlast, which is Ghost Island.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, we are watching Ghost Island over on the Patreon. We are watching episode 7, Fear Keeps You Sharp. And this is the Chris Noble boot. He gets booted from Ghost Island at the merge. It is his first tribal council, and it's the only person whose first tribal council is this vote. And he gets booted here, but he also does not have a vote because he finds an advantage in his buff to go to Ghost Island and kind of press his luck to extend the idol that he has, and he loses his vote for his next tribal council. Why he doesn't play the idol, the world may never know, but we lose him here at the merge at his first tribal council that he feels so confident that everyone is voting for Dom.
And Wendell. Because he orchestrated split vote where he took all other, like, the other 10 people on the tribe that are not him, Dom, and Wendell to the well. And was like, hey, guys, we really got to flush Wendell or Dom's idol. So, like, let's put votes on Dom and Wendell. Very interesting decision. But, and this is kind of, like, the conceit of, like, not going to tribal council and the naivety you can have going into it. Because, remember, Naviti didn't avoid going to tribal council in Ghost Island. They did go to to tribal council in the prior to the swap and everything.
No, Chris not, after the swap.
Prior to one of the swaps. Point still stands. And it was
when Chris got sent to Ghost Island.
Ghost Island, and Ghost Island was like this, like, hey, you're safe for this vote type of deal. Because that's how they decided to do Ghost Island, because it's spooky, I guess. So they got to give him something. And because of that, the only time Chris could have gone to Tribal Council in the pre-merge portion of the game, he didn't go. So this is the first time he's picking up his torch and he's voting. And he is so convinced.
Well, he's not voting.
Oh, he's not voting. You're right. He's not voting because he lost his vote. But he's picking up his torch and he gets it lit and immediately gets it extinguished. You'll note Jeff does not make a big deal of Chris Noble lighting his torch here, though. It is.
Well, he says, "If it didn't get fire, fire represents your life." He does the whole thing.
It's so quick, and it's not as extravagant.
Well, he's already done it twice.
I know, but he already did it twice in 48 as well, and there were more people in 48 because there were four people who hadn't been to Tribal Council at that point. Right. So it's fascinating seeing Chris and the way he goes here, and the thing is, he didn't have to be this merge boot.
He didn't. If he just played his idol, or two, if he just agreed to have a ceasefire with Dom and Wendell, then we'd see Libby going here instead of Expo.
Absolutely. It's so, this is one of those moments where you have to take it and learn from it, because this is why they tell you to say yes in Survivor, because Dom and Wendell sit Chris down in this instance to negotiate a ceasefire, be like, hey, listen, we can go at each other later in the game, totally fine, but like, let's work together for now. Let's keep Navidi strong, going back to our outwit moment. Mm-hmm. This idea of like the strong tribe, and it's actually really funny in contrast to 48, where Charity is pushing the idea of Siva strong because she hasn't gone to Tribal Council, and Chris is pushing back on the idea of Siva or of Navidi strong. Just because he hates Wen or Dom.
Yeah, exactly. And the Ghost Island merge dynamic is so wild because we have this Dom versus Chris battle the entire episode, where in 48 we don't really have this, like, we have people pushing for Charity, but it's not this big kind of, all right, the score is going to be settled here.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, Charity, you've kind of been on the outs the entire time. Sorry, you're out.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at the, like, Chris and Dom beef, it's similar. It's more in line with the Say and Cedric beef in this episode than it is with anything else that's going on.
Yeah. And then we also have Philippines here, because Tandang doesn't go to Tribal Council until the merge. An entire tribe does not go, and there's no real swap. So we have Matt Singh going until Malcolm and Denise get absorbed, and then Kalabau goes the rest of the time until the merge, and that's when Tandang gets their first taste at Tribal Council, and because Abby Maria is there, RC goes home.
This is one of those instances where, and a lot of times you'll hear survivors talk about the fact that, like, you have to go to Tribal Council in the early stages of the game. It's beneficial, sorry, I should say, to go to Tribal Council early in the game. Like, yes, you're at risk of going home, but you get to test your alliances, you get to test the trust of everyone around you, and you also know how to approach these situations. Because when we see these large groups get to the merge and not having gone to Tribal Council before, they want blood. Like, they're especially in this situation where there's no swap in Philippines, right? Tandang has been together the entire time. Abby Maria and RC started on good terms, then they, be it just like personality clashes, Pete kind of instigating it with some of like his gaslighting techniques that he did on the both of them. But like, these two women grew to detest each other.
And I don't think RC ever hated Abby. I think Abby just started to hate RC, and then she was done and didn't want to hear anything, and RC was like, well,
yeah, okay. But it starts that conflict, right? It's that similar conflict to what we have with Dom and Chris Noble, right? Like, there's the conflict there, and because of that, you can't get over it. One of the things with the Ghost Island merge episode is the entire episode is dedicated to the conflict between Dom and Chris Noble. And that's the exact same thing we see in Philippines. That entire episode is dedicated to Ab and Maria versus RC.
So really, advice for those going on to Survivor, go to tribal council. I'm not saying throw it, because then, you know, your tribe winds up losing everything after you throw it. But I don't know. Be okay with losing. I don't know what to say here, but go to tribal
council. I don't even think it's a be okay with losing aspect. I think it's a, hey, don't panic when you do go to tribal council. Like, you have to put trust in, but make sure you're putting trust appropriately in, and make sure that you don't have any tensions on your tribe. I think that's the bigger thing. If you're winning, make sure you're not winning too much, and like, you're not alienating yourself, right? Because again, I think one of the issues here is that Siva had six people, and there was the illusion of Siva strong.
Yeah.
I think that's why ultimately the decision to vote off Charity was much better for David, Kyle, and Camilla than voting out Say here. Because yes, Say is a wild card, but it's very clear at this point, Say, like, no one's really willing to work with Say. And you're still fine with her going, because again, you split the votes on her. But Charity, I think just Charity being in the game still provides that illusion of Siva strong.
Yep.
And because of that, it's just safer to get rid of them. And it makes it seem like a lot of the times we hear, especially like in swaps and stuff, the idea of like cracks in the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that there are cracks, and it shows that you're willing to work with other people. I think that's really important in Survivor, is showing that versatility and that ability to adapt, where when you get these tribes that have these tensions and they bubble up and they become so bad that they have to vote them out of the merge because it's your first opportunity to, it can kind of lead to a point where you start crumbling after that and you don't really have a chance of surviving afterwards, right? Like, look at how Tandang goes from there, right?
Yeah.
They don't have the, like, yes, two of them sit at Final Tribal Council, but
it's due to Matt Singh helping them along.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things where you have to be very careful when you are a tribe who is going in with the numbers at a merge, especially if you haven't gone to tribal council, because you don't know how fed up everyone is. And I think the lesson to learn out of all of this is managing your relationships on your original tribe.
Yeah.
And making sure that there aren't those tensions or those misconceptions or like whatever David thought about Charity in this episode.
Yes. Well, that concludes our episode here. So everyone just remember, watch Ghost Island episode 7. We'll be talking about it tomorrow over on the Patreon. John, what's up in the Specialist Universe the rest of this week? I mean, we were already here on Monday, so you got half of it.
Well, kind of. We had a last minute substitution on the recap this week. Blake stepped in for Will. I'll Will in if you listen to what Blake has to say. So Blake and Phil recapped this merge not merge episode on Wednesday. They were then joined by Tegwith for digging deeper yesterday. That's a really great conversation just about this idea of like merge versus not merge. McKenna and Kyle covered the latest episode of The Amazing Race yesterday. Phil is going to be joined tomorrow, so not Sunday this week, Saturday this week, by Gabe from 47 to do the predictions of power, because that should be a fun podcast, so make sure you tune into that. McKenna and Phil will be back on Tuesday to talk about the penultimate set of episodes for this season of Australian Survivor, which is getting really, really interesting. So if you haven't been following along, make sure you check in on that.
We're at the pointy end of the stick,
as they love saying on Australian Survivor. And then, of course, on the Patreon, every season matters. They are wrapping up Gabon pretty quickly here, so get in on that. We have the casting perspective, Phil and Will's Q&A, Phil's after show. Movies, Phil and I are talking. We weren't sure when we put out the $5 Tuesday on this past Tuesday what we were going to talk about, but we are going to be talking about Tombstone, paying our respects to Val Kilmer after his passing this week. And then McKenna and I are back next week to once again rewind whatever happens in this Split Tribal Council episode as we desperately try to find things that relate to the same thing we have to talk about every single season.
Yay! Okay, well, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time. Goodbye!
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.